that sounds like Connor's beatbox. I believe it. This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show, Friday morning. Connor, how do callers call in?
844-967-2789. You can call in to Walk Radio.
I'm here today with Scott Williams, namesake. Scott, how are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah. So this was your first day, I think, of having an extensive conversation with CJ. CJ called in and revealed to us that he was surely capable of being bipartisan because he's consumed media in a very bipartisan way to try and gather as broadly the data that he could. I think he said one of the pieces of evidence he had for that was that he had listened to Fox News for 25 years. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the most unbiased station in the world.
Yeah, that's what he said. It was the most unbiased. So what do you think of that, Scott? I mean,
if you watch anything for 25 years, I feel like the brainwashing is now complete.
It's... the job is done, right?
Yes, you're so far down the creek that you're actually about to enter the ocean. You should get a bigger boat.
Yeah, so, well, anyway, I do appreciate CJ calling in because I think it's important that we talk, that people who have diverse views present them. My only hope is that the people who do that do it with enough open mind so that they're willing to talk about their positions and to try and reanalyze themselves to figure out what biases we have. I think as a teacher, one of the things you do try and understand and teach in various courses is the notion of bias, right? That people carry a bias?
Yes. And we all have bias. Everyone has bias. So, I mean, you know, if CJ was not CJ as a person, but if that type of a mindset, someone who has strong beliefs and opinions, was in my classroom, you know, again, this goes back to like the questioning of why with issues. And so, you know, I guess, but the one thing that I constantly remind students of in an academic setting is, you know, argument, like when you argue with someone, it's usually emotional. And then that when you argue with a sibling or you argue with a spouse, you know, you're easily pulled into emotional directions in that. But in an academic setting or in an intellectual conversation, in a debate that is ongoing in the media, you know, I think the piece that is constantly missing now is the need to understand the opposite view and the motivations for that view, and so that you truly understand why they believe what they believe. And I feel like when we, you know, and again, CJ, I'm as guilty of it as anyone. You know, we raise our voice, we talk over people, we use volume, and we revert back to the arguable point rather than understanding that we're in a situation where we're actually listening to each other, we're trying to understand each other. We're attempting eventually to find common ground so that we can agree to disagree in a way that allows the conversation to move forward, rather than just being like, you know, as Sandy has said multiple times, they just kind of stuck spinning wheels.
Well, in effect, talking about something you do know a lot about, which is education, one of the areas that we seem to have arguments about and that are at the emotional level rather than the factual level is this question of what's wrong with public education and what should be done about it. And what is your view of that? Do you think the causative things are? Why, for instance, the MPS system clearly has some bad results coming out of it. But the question of why is such an important issue to address first, and then the question of how to solve the issues that are identified with the why become much more pertinent. And my sense is that this why is very open to discussion.
The thing that people like are we referencing like the CRT the emphasis, or are you talking about just more broadly about public schools versus private schools versus voucher schools how we educate?
Yes, I mean the last administration had a secretary of education who was hell-bent on spreading voucher schools because it was the view that having essentially a privatized school system would solve so many of the problems associated with the outcomes of urban public schools, because most people when they talk about the
problems, Supreme Court agrees with that too, like the money now that goes to public schools are also going to go to Catholic schools. I can't remember what's the name of the case was. You probably do
in the state of Wisconsin voucher case or the federal case.
The federal case.
I don't remember the name, but the fact is that and that's a slightly different issue, but it's certainly part of the same issue that it's going to have that effect, but. But it's all, I think what relates to it is this question of what are the issues that relate to the outcomes that are always pointed at as the fundamental problem.
Well, right. I mean, right now, the CRT debate does get to what you're referencing, because what you're referencing is the notion that, I mean, you could have it in a conversation of inside of curriculums, you've removed things like welding and automobile work, you know, like shop. Mm-hmm. Type classes and replace them with, you know, soft classes. And that would include what I teach, like social studies. But I think the criticism that's overwhelming the education system right now is the idea of like the whole child, where we're going to, you know, we have to foster both their intellectual and educational advancement, also with their well-being and their notion of well-being.
Well, I mean, but now you're talking strictly about the educational process. My sense is that the debate that we fail to have is the extent to which poverty and the situation that people, that children are living in their homes has a great deal to do with whatever the outcome from their schools could possibly be. So that the question of whether, you know, when you take...
But isn't that a horse and cart argument?
When you take the entire population of an area and you decide that they all have to be educated, I mean, one of the issues with voucher schools and private schools is that most of them are not randomly selected students, so that you end up with a different mix in the school than you have in the community. The issue that like Milwaukee Public Schools has is that they have all of the students in the community who might be left needing instruction after students have self-selected themselves into other schools. So you end up with a socioeconomic audience for the schools that might be a difficult problem unto itself, even beyond what curriculum you have in the school. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And so do you think that's, I mean, my sense is that just doesn't get discussed enough. And the notion of creating vouchers to solve the school problem isn't going to solve the poverty problem.
Well, I was just going to say you can't talk about one and not the other, but they're also not necessary. I mean, some people like to separate them entirely, and it makes it easier, right? It simplifies to let's talk about just the school and look at what just the school is doing versus let's look at the neighborhood, let's understand the social problems that are occurring there and their causes, and then figure out policies to try to fix that.
Well, and the problem,
and then from there operate of trying to fix the school.
Well, of course, policies need to be based on facts, and facts usually are based on things like outcomes. Outcomes, however, are dependent on something more than just the curriculum in the school. So that's where I think we have a problem, is evaluating the outcomes and trying to figure out the causes and figure out what response there should be to the causes. I think we've got another break coming up. We'll be back after the break.